Since 2015, close to 200 people have been displaced by fires in San Francisco's Mission District. At least 58 of those were residents living in a building on the corner of 22nd and Mission that caught fire back in January of 2015. The businesses on the ground were destroyed, and residents were left without permanent homes. One man, Mauricio Orellana, died in the blaze. If you walk by the building today, you'll notice that it's still in disrepair. None of the apartments have been rebuilt so far. So where does that leave displaced residents, especially in one of the most competitive rental markets in the country? We sent KLW's Hannah Kingsley Ma to follow up with one of the families impacted by the fire to find out more.
Marcela Cordova had just finished dinner with her daughter when she heard the sirens. They sounded closer and closer, so she told her daughter to stay put and open the front door.
It was like pitch black, and the heat just like hit me in my face. I just remember slamming my door and told my daughter that we had to try to see how we got out because the building was on fire.
Cordova's daughter ran into her bedroom where the fire escape was, but the bars on her window were welded shut.
She starts like pulling in. She was just saying like, we're gonna die. And then I don't know how it just came to my head. I told her to stand in the living room, and I opened the door and I started screaming until the fireman found us.
And there was no fire alarms?
No. No fire alarms at all.
The alarms weren't working. The fire escape ladders didn't touch the ground, and one of the exits was padlocked shut. This building had known fire code violations dating back to 2011.
You have all these families, all these kids, and we're living in this building that could just collapse any day.
After the firefighters evacuated the building, Cordova and her family relocated to a shelter at the Salvation Army. Eventually, the city was able to make them an arrangement with the Treasure Island Development Authority to offer them housing at the rate they were previously paying. They've been living on Treasure Island for the last year and a half.
For me, it's hard because I was born and raised in the city. And so to be over here, it's like, this doesn't feel like my home.
There's one small convenience store at the entrance of the island, and that's about it. To do your laundry, you have to go to the city. Public transportation is limited. To get into the East Bay, for instance, you can take the one bus that goes to San Francisco and then BART across the bay. But the fire hasn't just caused inconvenience. It's also caused trauma. It's hard for Cordova to sleep at night.
I can't be in the dark because for some reason it just keeps coming to my head. And I feel like I can't breathe sometimes, so my anxiety is really bad.
One big source of this anxiety, her future housing. Technically, Cordova has the right to return to her building at the same rate she was paying before the fire. But right now, it's a pile of rubble. It's caught fire again since it first burned down, most likely from squatters living there illegally. And the landlord hasn't shown any real initiative to get the building back up and running. Cordova doesn't want to live on Treasure Island forever, so her housing situation is shaky.
If they don't rebuild the building, I think we're going to be forced to move out of the Bay Area.
Where will people go?
Not sure.
And that's the thing. Cordova and her family didn't just lose their home. They lost it in the middle of a housing crisis, which is making it harder for her and all the other families to get back on their feet. Just ask this guy.
I'm Ben Ames, Disaster Response Manager for the San Francisco Human Services Agency.
Ames carries a pager with him everywhere he goes.
There is an event, let's say it's a fire, and I have a pager, and my pager goes off, and I monitor the fire.
After that, he figures out which fire victims need housing through something called the Good Samaritan Tenancy. That's where the city asks landlords to voluntarily offer vacant apartments at the original rate displaced tenants were paying, which means
the higher the displaced person's rent is, the better success they have with using the Good Samaritan legislation.
The Good Samaritan Tenancy relies on the generosity of landlords. But because of the current housing market, they are more reluctant than ever to give up their space.
This is a business for them, and they don't necessarily want to come and offer up units at substantially reduced costs. So if you have one apartment building and it's your livelihood, this is a big ask from the city.
And on top of that, the Good Samaritan Tenancy is just supposed to be a temporary fix. The reduced rate lasts for 1 year, and then after that, you can renew it for another. And the policy is fairly new, just about 5 years old, which means there isn't exactly a roadmap of what to do when those 2 years are up and there's no apartment to move back to.
I haven't had that issue where people are at the end of their second term of their lease and can't go back.
Hypothetically, a landlord could sit on a ruined property until tenants become priced out of the city, making it harder for families to claim their right to return. A lot of the other families from the 22nd fire are housed by the Good Samaritan Tenancy. I asked Ames, what is going to happen if the building isn't ready by the time the other families' Good Samaritan leases are up?
We have to sit down and have a conversation with my administration and look at this and talk to our political leaders and come up with a decision.
What do you think that's sort of like in an ideal situation would happen?
I don't know.
There have been some changes. This summer, the Board of Supervisors passed legislation to give fire victims priority in the affordable housing lottery. But not only that, landlords now must create an action plan for displaced tenants to give them a better sense of when they might be able to return. In addition, the city set aside $300,000 to help fire victims pay for their housing. But as Ames sees it, true recovery from disaster in the city is all tied up in a greater problem.
San Francisco is very generous. If you need stuff replaced, we can get you a refrigerator, we can get you a mattress, we can get you pots and pans. But because of the housing market, what is the biggest challenge is finding affordable housing. And that is an issue that is way bigger than my office.
San Francisco's housing policies for people displaced by disaster are designed to be temporary. But in this current housing climate, they can feel actively like displacement. Treasure Island is slated for redevelopment, which means Marcela Cordova's home will most likely be torn down in several years. Last week, I checked in with Marcela Cordova. She says that she hasn't been able to find housing in the city since she doesn't qualify for low-income apartments but can't afford to move back.
It doesn't feel like my home, so I don't like to come home.
For now, when she goes to work, she drives close to the neighborhood she grew up and made a home in, and returns back to an island in the bay.
There's nothing here, just a nice view at the entrance.
It's true. From her house, you can see the whole city skyline. It looks close, but it feels far. For CrossCurrents, I'm Hannah Kingsley-Maugh.